Hey, welcome to the Mead House. Jeff here.
Chris here.
It is. You've been busy.
I've been busy. There's so much. I mean, it's fair season. I've got a lot to do there, and holy cow, it's just run. I'm happy. I'm having a great time.
It's the stuff you're doing is just wholesome as all get out too, and it's I'm sure your heart is filled to bursting in a Grinch Saved Christmas way, not a the health concern way.
Yeah. This is very healthy. I mean, a lot of great people having a lot of fun being at the fairs and meeting people. And for those of you who, I'm going to actually spill the beans on this one because Jeff's very delicately stepping around and I appreciate it. But I play Steve the Gnome in the Midwest, and I've been to several things from Texas to in Missouri, Oklahoma, and a whole bunch of places like that. Expanding out, I'll be in Bristol this year. But I play a garden gnome with my wife, and we play garden gnomes that go out and make people happy. And that's our sole purpose of doing all that. And we're just having a wonderful time meeting people like that.
Yeah, you guys wander around. You got that little tiny sprout.
Yeah, haircut sprouts, yeah.
And, you have kind words and affirmations to say to people. And I don't know how people miss you at fair because you are... Love you, dude. You're 6 foot something with a foot tall red hat.
I'm actually 5'10". I have about 18 inch red cone hat from a gnome. And I get the biggest thing I get here is I couldn't find you today. I don't know what to tell.
Now the one you've been doing recently, the Central Missouri Fair, it's what, 7-ish acres or
it's not huge.
It's not a huge developed spot of land yet.
Yeah, but it's a fairly sizable piece. I'd say by maybe a quarter of KCRF or something like that. It's big. It's got some space.
And it runs like what, 10 to 6, 10 to 7?
Yeah, it starts at 10 AM and goes to 6 PM.
Now you tell me you've not successfully made one orbit around this smallish space any of the days you've been out
there. No, all 4 days I've been there. I have not made one single solid lap around all the areas there. I hit all the main thoroughfares, but I cannot in any... I am the slowest performer at that fair. I cannot make a lap. And I've tried. And... the people there are just fantastic. I mean, one time I accidentally lost my wife's parasol. And before I knew I lost it, a late girl was coming up. I found this for you. I know it's yours. And I'm, thank you so much. And it's a wonderful. We're coming up on the last weekend here, this coming weekend. And if you hear this now and you can make it out to Kingdom City for the Central Missouri, give it a try. It's a lot of fun. There's no joust, but there is armored combat. And it's just a lot of fun.
It is. It's so wholesome. I love that you're doing this, and I love that you're having fun with it, even though, I know at the end of the weekend, it's like, oh,
yeah, really. My feet hurt so bad.
I didn't even bother contacting you Monday, because being like, okay, he's going to be in a coma.
Yeah.
He's otherwise, like, fixing, doing laundry and catching up on the life stuff put on hold to do fairs. I've been around that block.
Yeah, you've done that. Yeah. And my biggest problem is that I'll sit down and go, oh, this feels so good. Then you sit there going, I've got to get back up again. Oh, no.
Suck.
All right.
So, Chris.
Thank you, everybody, for calling, for listening to us here.
Yeah, guys, I get to see the stats week after week. And, that number, it's catching, we get like another a few of you every week. It's awesome.
Yeah, love having you here.
You guys are writing in, commenting on our Facebook posts, stuff like that. I keep saying we need to do more new social media because I think Facebook is kind of,
it's not as popular as it once was.
No, and there are alternatives. So I think, we should maybe get on Instagram. We should maybe get some TikToks going and stuff like that.
Yeah. And we keep saying this, but right now, we are both very, very busy, and we'd love to do it. We're going to have to chisel out some time in our week and do it.
Yeah, I think we're just going to have to, and, it's not like I have nothing else going on.
Well, no, we have,
But yeah, guys, you guys listening at home, you are the special sauce that really makes this as fun as it is, as enjoyable as it is, getting to interact with you guys, whether it's in person, the Valkyrie's Horn, a few weeks back, or virtually on
Virtually,
Facebook.
yeah, Facebook. And sometimes even in person. We've met people. I've met people that listen to us. And it's really cool to meet them.
Absolutely. Of course, the other people we got to thank.
Bacchus and Barleycorn.
There you go. They have been our sponsors since we got this thing back up and running. And
They've been outstanding. They've been great people, very supportive. And not just to us,
no.
to each and every person that comes in their store. They have the equipment, the supplies, the knowledge, the passion, and everything you need to ferment whatever you want to ferment.
Across the board, you got the standard stuff like mead, of course, like what we do, beer, wine, cider, but they've also got the stuff that's a little bit more out there, like cheese or kombucha
Or
or
yogurt.
sake. Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
It's all and they and they're more than glad to help. They're more than glad to help you troubleshoot. Jake and the team are just outstanding.
You couldn't ask for nicer people to work with or get advice from. I cannot recommend them enough. And hey, if you use our promo code,
MHP10.
you got it.
Yes.
You can get 10% off your order. I know that works online. I'm pretty sure it works in store because I think they have the same system. So never hurts to ask, right?
Worst case scenario, if you go to the store, you don't get the discount, you'll get a nice glass of something nice.
That's true. They always have something interesting they're fermenting in store and have all kinds of stuff on tap. So that's kind of one of those perks of getting to shop in person.
Yeah, it's really nice. And if you, again, if you got the time to go visit. They're absolutely worth the trip.
So Chris, I was at the Asian supermarket last week and was kind of looking around the fruit and veggie little aisle they had there, and I saw something that I knew I had to grab for us.
Well, what'd you grab this time?
If you remember from a few months ago, we did an episode all about tamarind,
We did, yeah.
and we had all kinds of different tamarind on there. We had the
We, yeah.
whole fruit, we had some of the processed kind of
Paste stuff.
yeah, well, the paste stuff was more processed than just like the fruit that was out of the shell and had the little seeds and stuff removed, but
Yeah.
there was all kinds of different varieties of it.
Yeah.
And one thing we could not find between either of our trips to multiple supermarkets was the sweet tamarind
Yeah,
variety.
I haven't found that.
I found a box of sweet tamarind.
Oh, cool. Okay, here we
These
go.
are whole beans, and it almost looks like it's in a little gift box. It's like a purple and gold embossed plaster, sorry, paper box, cardboard, little multi flap seal thing.
I'm not waiting for you here.
Yeah, no.
I want to try this for a while.
And it looks exactly like the sour tamarind we had before.
It is not the same. This is good. First of all, the seed comes off really easy. And it is a lot milder, not incredibly sweeter, but definitely sweeter to me.
It's not a sharp sourness like the regular sour tamarind, if you will.
It doesn't have that sharpness at all. It's very smooth. This would be a really good mead. The sour tamarind will make a very sharp flavored mead, but this.
Well, I think the sour tamarind is the way to go for making mead just because we are going to balance it with honey, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the kind of like the whole sweet cherry versus sour cherry idea. You want that sharpness in there.
These for a snack, these are outstanding.
Yeah.
But I think as the sweet tamarind, if I was going to make, okay, I keep talking about making a tropical meat at some point with a
Yeah.
bunch of tropical plants. I think that'd be a good addition to it.
I think so too.
There'd be a good underlying flavor.
You would have to go a little, have to be careful with it because I think it could overwhelm other flavors. The tropical flavors can be light and, easy to. This is even as a sweet and not as sour as the tamarind we tried before, it's still got a punch to it.
Yeah,
So as an
that's
under
good.
kind of like an underlying ancillary flavor, it could be really interesting and add some of the sharpness of the acidity that we're looking for good balanced stuff.
Yeah, but
I
yeah.
it could also just kick everything else out and say,
Well,
no, this is a tamarind thing.
that can happen with anything. Okay, well that was a very pleasant. Appreciate it,
Yeah,
Jeff. But
of
before
course.
we go any further, I do want to notice that we have a Prairie Rose Mead here.
Yeah, bead of the day is from Susan over at Prairie Rose Meadery. We picked this up while we were down for Valkyrie's Horn last month. Was it last month? Must have been last
Yeah,
month.
what well,
It's still April.
yeah, it's still April, so yeah.
This is her choke cherry mead.
And choke cherry is I did an Arona berry, and I found that choke cherry and Arona berry are closely related,
Very close, yes.
but not the same.
Nope.
So here we go. It's got a brownish red color. You can see through it. It's deep amber. I love the amber quality of that. It's going to smell. I may be off on my smell today.
Has an oxidized smell to it.
There it is. Yeah, a little bit, not bad oxidation,
No.
but I'm getting a, I have an unidentifiable berry odor I'm getting out of this. I couldn't tell you what it was if I didn't know.
If I remember right, choke cherries are one of those cherries you don't really want to like eat off the vine. You either use them to make like a jelly or a jam, or else a beverage.
Okay. Looking it up, also called a bitterberry, which is something I would not have thought of.
Astringent red to black fruit that comes sweeter when ripened and more processed. Used for jams, jellies, and syrups. Another plant called bitterberry is an African shrub. Okay, so that's not
There you go. Wow, this thing grows up to 20 feet or higher
wild.
above the ground. This is a berry tree.
That's a hell of a shrub.
And tasting it's got a bitterness.
There is some bitterness to it. This is more tannic than a lot of the meads I typically drink. It's a little heavier on the tannin side of the balance than, usually we get sweet or acidic. And that's for a bitter berry, for a little berry that is noted for its tannin on content. Yeah, no, that totally tracks.
And this is a 12.5% by volume. So this is pretty good. I mean, it's a little heavy for tannin for me to say it's a great mead.
It's
The balance is tannin heavy.
right. This is not a you wouldn't want to chug this, obviously. This is a slow sipper, sit and think about it. I'm enjoying it. It is nicely balanced. It's just a little different than what we usually get around here, which is more tending towards the sweet or the acidic or both.
And this is verging on dry. I mean, it's not very sweet at all.
I could call it off dry. Yeah, that's when you swallow that tannin content, and the fruit gives an almost that perception of dryness.
Yeah, that's what I'm taking. Now, the other part I want to say about this is after you swallow it, the tan lingers for a moment, but it starts clearing rather rapidly. So I don't think it's again, don't chug it, but it's not horrible.
Right.
We're going to talk about today is we've gotten more people listening now, and I brought up to Jeff that I think it'd be a good idea to go back over the process we'd use to make mead
Right.
to make a safe and controlled mead like we do. Now, is this the only path to the forest? Absolutely not.
No,
There's so
no.
many ways to do this. But the fact of the matter is a lot of people are listening now that didn't hear us the time before. You can look back, and we thought it'd be important to go over it again.
It's never a bad idea to cover best practices and talk about the best way to handle stuff. I mean, the stuff that we have through trial and error figured out, it's the way we like to do things. And we've put out a few episodes as far as, hey, here's how to make an 8% mead. Hey, here's how to make a 12% mead, starter meads, stuff like that.
And you can absolutely look those up online. They're absolutely easily. You can take these starter meats that we talked about, the 8 and 12, and you can add fruit. You can add spice. You can do all kinds of things just with that start, but this is how we start.
And the idea here, I think we want to highlight, is that these are best practices for us. Obviously, you can look to your heart's content on YouTube or TikTok or whatever and see some weird stuff, and people doing all kinds of their own practices. Or you could ask ChatGPT or the other AIs for mead making advice and get
Don't do that.
that.
Don't
No,
do that. Okay. I'm not saying what they're telling you to make is bad, because the most of the stuff we saw to make, it would work, but they didn't give you a complete blueprint, and that is so important when you're doing this is science, people. You have to know all the steps, and you have to have all the stuff. So here we go.
So let's talk about equipment, because that was the failing point I think we saw most often in those there are little two-part AI experiment, is what equipment do we need to make a good meat?
Okay.
And obviously, everybody has some kind of fermenter, whether
Yeah.
it's a plastic bottle or a
Buck glass bottle, plastic bucket,
stainless
whatever.
steel. Yeah, you got all kinds of options there. From here, we start getting all kinds of weird advice. The one thing we highlighted that only one of those AI models
That we
even
did
mentioned is a
was
hydrometer.
hydrometer. This is so important. Now let's back up. We have our bucket,
Right.
our container. It has to be, food safe,
Right.
has to be reasonably sturdy and unblemished as far as scratches if it's like a plastic or something.
Right. Yeah, you can get used brewing supplies easily because this is one of those hobbies where people go, ah, I haven't brewed in a couple of years. This is taking up space in my garage. Let me
And
put it on Facebook Marketplace and see if I can get rid of it for a
or,
buck.
they'll walk up to somebody like me, like my brother-in-law did to me and said, hey, my brother-in-law, like, hey, I'm done with this here, take it. Okay. Now my wife is mad. Anyway. But no, you got your bucket, and the first thing you need after the bucket is you need your airlock. You need a hole in the box up the top with a sealable point with an airlock. If you do not have an airlock, you have a potential bomb.
Or you have an open exposed ferment. And I would say, hey, when we're looking at our fermentation vessel, the other thing we need to think about is air seal, right?
Yeah.
I do a lot of my fermenting in little plastic buckets or bigger plastic buckets,
Yeah.
let's be honest. And
I've got everything from a 1 gallon jug to a 10 gallon bucket.
The buckets are great, but you need to check and make sure that your grommet at the top of the bucket lid is intact. I do that every two or three ferments just to make sure that everything is going as it's supposed to. Those little the soft molded rubber those are made of, it's another thing that can scratch. It's another vector for biofilm and stuff like that. You got to make sure it's there. If it is scratched or if it's damaged, replace it.
And also, the inside of the bucket should not have a deep scratch in it anywhere.
No, obviously not. And
Okay.
that goes doubly so for glass, because how do you fix a scratch glass? You just
You don't. Okay. On with the rest of the equipment. Now, the hydrometer is so important. This is how you're going to control the amount of alcohol you're making, the alcohol by volume. This is, I could not believe the AIs all but one missed it. And this is so critical. Because you do not know what you're doing, you don't know the details of what you need. To a degree, you can repeat the process.
Right. Repeatability is the secret sauce here, or just having a good idea of how much alcohol you're finishing with at the end of the ferment. Sure, you can do honey additions by volume,
My son has done this.
but like seasonal variability in the honey. So for those of you that are not avid apiculturalists, the way that honey bees may make the honey, they will collect it in the form of nectar. And they will take it back to the hive and they will put it in those cells and then they will fan it to help dehydrate it. Generally, they seal it in the cells around 12 to 18% water. So they've driven off a very large amount of water
Yeah.
to do that. But that 12 to 18% variability means the sugar content of your honey is also variable.
Yeah.
So if I take an early spring harvest versus a late fall harvest and do 3 pounds of each, there is a
There's a gap.
when I measure the gravity of both, there's gonna be a difference there. So I always just go by gravity. And if
Yeah.
it takes a little extra or a little less, bully.
Now, this is what we do because we like the control level. If my son, he threw X amount of honey, X amount of water into a bucket, into a container, and threw yeast in. One of the time it was bread yeast. Don't recommend it. I mean, it was drinkable, but not my favorite. And it made mead. You can do it. He cannot do that again. I'm kind of hoping he doesn't do that again. But, this is about control in a
Well,
science.
let's rephrase. He can do that again. He's just not going to get the same result.
Yeah, okay.
And
Fair enough.
it is vanishingly difficult to get the same result trying even the same process. The closest you could get is hopefully to have like the same big bucket of honey to sample from and use the same, what I want to say, the same lot of yeast or whatever.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'd get something very similar. But even something as simple as a few degrees difference in indoor air temperature
Could make a difference.
it could affect the long-term metabolism of the yeast and how they process it and things like that. So
The hydrometer is more accurate. If it says there's this much sugar when you start, and you finish at this is this much less sugar, you know how much alcohol is in that container.
there is one
Period.
alternative to hydrometer that I would say, yeah, you could go with that.
Okay.
Refractometer.
Refractometer.
They make these in all kinds of different varieties. They have a refractometer for honey specifically to see, hey, is this honey that I'm pulling from my frames stable enough to be like store shelf, blah 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 blah. They make them for all kinds of industries like automotive industry. You can use it to test antifreeze, I think. And
I didn't know
my wife at her veterinary clinic has a refractometer to test urine samples to see if a pet is diabetic, for example,
that. Okay.
because it will have more sugar in it, right?
Yeah.
But
Refractometer, it works. I've never used it.
wine refractometers are great. But here's the thing. They are fantastic for sampling, especially when you're putting a recipe together, because as opposed to like needing to fill the sample jar for a hydrometer, you need a drop or two.
Okay, so you use a
So
lot less.
you use a lot less. You don't risk the sanitization issues of, okay, well, am I going to dump this entire sample jar back into my fermenter or am I going to throw it out? There's a lot less involved in it because you basically just need to sample it or
You need a
sanitize,
drop or two.
yeah, a little dropper tube. You put two on the slide part of the refractometer, hold it up to the light, and you see. Very quick, very easy. The problem, though, is that once you get that ferment started, alcohol refracts light differently than sugar solution does. And so you have to do math to skew it. I mean, there are all kinds of websites that will help you do that as far as, hey, I started with this gravity, now it's reading this.
What's my result?
What's my actual gravity?
With the hydrometer, it's measuring gravity, period.
It is what it is.
And honestly, if you practice safe sanitation practices, pouring your sample for your hydrometer back in is minimally risky.
More often than not, a lot of the times when I'm fermenting in a bucket with a nice wide jar and there's not like a Krausen layer or a lot of yeast foam on top, I'll just sanitize my hydrometer and dump it in the fermenter.
I do that
It's
too.
not the best practice.
I've
There
done
is
too.
a vector for, but I trust my sanitizing and sanitary process. So
Moving on. Other equipment, other than your hydrometer, you need a way to stir it. You need a silicone, a food safe plastic, or stainless steel. Silicone and stainless steel is my go-to.
yeah, I prefer silicone. I prefer stainless steel. You could do food safe plastic, and those are generally cheaper. But the other advantage to the food safe plastic is that it is less likely to scratch the inside of a bucket than just a straight up stainless steel spoon or whatever. And I really like I've got a stainless steel rod with little plastic wings on it. The plastic wings are replaceable, and it fits on a power drill.
Which it makes mixing so nice.
Well, it can still be very time consuming, but it makes the
But I guarantee your arm doesn't get nearly as tired.
it really doesn't. No, all I'm doing is holding up an 18 volt power drill. So
You're good to go.
bully.
You need that. You need your tube used to test your gravity. You'll
The
need a
sample jar
yeah, the
or
sample jar or
graduated
whatever.
cylinder, if we want to call it that.
You'll need your thief. You'll need your thief.
A wine thief is a good thing. I personally like the solid glass ones, but I know a lot of people like the three-part plastic ones. Those can be very good for pulling a sample or for pulling, your sample tube for your hydrometer.
They also come stainless steel.
The auto siphon and some kind of tube,
The
like the
tubing.
silicone or the vinyl, clear vinyl. You
Indispensable.
right,
Indispensable.
you could try it without it, but it's why, dude?
Yeah, you're working against yourself.
The plastic auto siphons cost what, maybe 15 bucks?
15, 20 on the outside, I think.
Right. They don't last forever, but they last a good long while, and they make process of getting from one
container
fermentation vessel to another
so much easier.
or into a bottle for your bottling step,
I
so
mean,
much easier.
you can get a pump if you want to, but a little bit of patience and a racking cane is all you need. And all right, so you have your tubing, you have, your equipment, you need a scale if you're going to measure out your ingredients, such like that. That's not absolutely necessary. You can do that by measuring spoon.
Yeah, you could use, you could, you know, when we're talking about ingredients that we measure by volume, we'll get to that later in the episode, I'm sure. But you might want a little kitchen scale or a little like jeweler scale to measure by grams if we're doing something, you know, like cloves, for example. Would I want to measure those by full ounces? A
Probably
whole,
not.
no, like a even a half an ounce of clove could be a lot if I'm doing a small batch.
Yeah, and something that's even cinnamon, which isn't nearly as strong as clove. Watch yourself. It's going to be there, but you'll need something to measure ingredients and your yeast and your nutrients and things like that.
The jeweler scale is particularly good for measuring out the, you know, how much ferment K or ferment O am I throwing in here, because it will do like little hundredths of a gram. And it might not be accurate at the hundredths, but it's at least accurate at the tens. And
It's
that's where I'm.
yeah, and that's honestly close enough for me.
I'm kind of in the same boat. It's not going to over nutrient if I'm, you know, a few hundredths plus or minus.
Yeah. But and I can't think of anything else equipment-wise we absolutely have to have for this. That's most of my stuff right there.
Now we're kind of getting into the additives, but there is, let's say there's one equipment piece that I want to talk about that we absolutely need that is not a compromise thing. Sanitizer.
Sanitizer. Okay, I put that ingredients in my head, but that's fine. Sanitizer is,
I think that's a good bridge to other
yeah,
stuff, but sanitizing is.
beyond important. If you see listen to some of our early shows, I ranted about sanitizer, and I use Star Sand. Star Sand's excellent. The
Star Sand wins 100% of the time
yeah.
because it is that easy to use. It stores well. It's,
Very stable.
you know, yeah, I can't say enough good things about it. There are two other alternatives that I'll say, yeah, no, those will work too. They're not my favorites, but those will work too. The other one I would throw out there is Iodoport. It's an iodine-based sanitizer. It works a lot like Star Sand in that it's a contact thing. And I have, at times, I have rotated Iodopor out for my Star Sand regular just because, hey, it probably kills things differently. And, you know, if you.
A little bit extra death in there, the germs are good with me.
If you go to, you know, a hospital or something like that, they have different sanitizers. They'll basically rotate through just to keep things killed.
Yeah.
If something develops a resistance to one thing, hey, you know, the next time we clean, we're using this on the. It's just good practice.
Yeah, the other one, we're going good.
I probably should do it more often, but I really haven't had any contamination issues. And the thing I like about Star Sand is that it is acid-based, and there really isn't a lot of microbiota that are resistant to acid.
Yeah.
So it works very well. That said, there are things that, you know, Star Sand doesn't work for. And if you get into like mushroom growing, Star Sand doesn't help.
Yeah.
There's plenty of stuff that can.
They can stand up to it.
That will at least take over where the nice thing about home brewing is that we're creating an environment where things other than yeast don't tend to thrive as easily. They are at a disadvantage. Mushroom growing is not that easy, but that's neither here nor there.
Last one is that brewer's power. I can't remember what's going on.
That is a cleaning agent,
Yeah, it's
not a
cleaning,
sanitizer.
but it's also important.
Cleaning is also important. The other one that I was thinking of, though, was the sodium metabisulfite,
Okay, yeah.
which is, it's a little different. It's kind of the old school way to do it. Jackie, for the longest time, was cleaning everything with that, even though he was selling Star Sand by the gallon. This stuff is a little weird in that it's not the contact that is doing the killing. It's actually the
The
gas.
gas, yeah. You put a little bit in the bottom of your bucket and let gas and close it.
You can put all of your supplies and stuff in the bucket, swish it around a little bit to help the gas move around, and give it a minute or two, and you're good.
You open it up and you keep your face away from it. Trust me, I've done that.
Yeah.
I did not enjoy the experiment experience. And then let it air out and dump it out, let it air out, and you're good to go.
The when I was working at Bacchus, the warning I gave every time somebody asked about it and I sold it, remember, if you're gonna test to see if your solution is still effective, don't stick your nose in it and inhale.
Wiped
Take your
it.
hand, waft it towards your nose. It will be plenty to smell.
Yeah.
You will your scent glands are gonna thank you for it
Yeah,
because they
and
will burn.
if you're like me and have any level of asthma, do not smell this stuff. It hurts. It physically is painful for me. The one time I did it, I'm not doing it again. I'm doing Star Sand. All right, now nutrients.
Right.
Fermate K, Fermate O.
There are a number of different nutrients
Yeah,
out
there's a
there.
lot.
I mean, the Fermate K is kind of my favorite because it combines the breadth of nutrients with more of a, what I want to say, it's a little bit more affordable as well. I'm kind of a cheapskate. I don't see a particularly major difference between Fermate K and Fermate O as far as flavor goes at the end of the day. But Fermate K for the longest time was half the cost and you needed half as much. So it's a four times savings in my book.
Yeah, so
And
I'm good with that.
it's also just a little easier to handle. For the longest time, all of my Fermate O would, even if I stored it in a airtight jar with a little, like, the little oxygen packet things, it would start to clump as it got water out of the air. It is extremely hydrophilic and it'll draw moisture out of the air and turn into little clumps, and it's just harder to use. Fermate K never had that problem with it. So, ease of use, expense, I'm Fermate K all the way. Fermate O is a little, it's more expensive. It is less effective as far as the amount of nutrient, but it has a number of people that are just,
Diehard fans.
yeah, they are dyed in the wool. They will, to their dying day, Fermate O all the way. Incidentally, do you know what the K and the O stand for?
I believe the K is. I know it has to do with chemistry, and I don't.
It doesn't.
It doesn't.
No. K stands for kosher.
Oh, okay.
O stands for organic.
Okay, I
That's
didn't
the
know
only
that.
difference.
I knew the K. I guess I should have known that because I knew that the Ferment O was supposed to be organic. I just never put that together. Okay, yeah. So, whichever, they both work just fine. Run with it. Remember when you're doing your nutrient, we'll go over the nutrition and how you nutrient thing later, but for now, they work.
Right. The only thing that I will say for other forms of nutrient is that I know what goes into Fermate K and Fermate O, and the amount of like the yeast assimilable nitrogen in there is really easy to calculate in the way that we make it based on the whole Tosna process.
And there's also yeast booster. There's all kinds of additives you can use after those. I
There's
mean,
DAP, there are also some a handful of different like unlabeled, unspecified yeast nutrients available on the market from different like yeast manufacturers or different chemical suppliers like Scott Labs and gosh, who is the there are so many homebrew outfitters that will sell you things. All of them, I think, have some kind of a yeast nutrient, whether it's intended for wine or beer or what have you. So you've got options beyond Fermate K and Fermate O. Fermate K is the one that I use and recommend. Fermate O is easy enough to figure out based on Fermate K. If you see any of my calculations, you can take the amount of Fermate K you need in something and basically just hit times two.
yep, and to double it, you're on your way. Other additives you might need, if you're doing a base recipe, that's all you need. If you're
Basically.
just doing a trad or traditional, you're good to go. If you're doing anything that has color or flavor, other flavors, fruits, spices, everything, there's other things you can get. Write to us. We're not going to go into every single detail about this right now.
Sure.
That's just be silly. All right, now we've gone through the nutrients. We're going to go to construction,
Putting it together.
putting it together.
And the main ingredient in any mead.
Honey.
Right. So we talked about at the start of the episode, a lot of people will go, oh, yeah, no, I want 3 pounds of honey per gallon.
I've done this. It's how I started.
That's how everybody started. And it's how a lot of recipes on the internet, all over the internet, are basing it. There's nothing necessarily wrong with it, but for repeatability's sake, for getting it right every time, I dial it in by the gravity.
Yeah, dial in by the gravity. That means you put your water in. Spring water is preferred.
Mm-hmm.
Reverse osmosis works, not as well.
It doesn't.
Distilled is right out. That's for your sanitizer.
Distilled and reverse osmosis are basically the same thing at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And you could use distilled if you want. You could use reverse osmosis. Either way, it lacks the minerality that spring water gives you. A good spring water, yeah, it helps buffer the solution for, you know, those acid rises and falls during the course of the fermentation. So spring water all the way.
It just tastes better. So run with that, guys. Now, and, you know, your sanitizer should be done with distilled water. We did not say that before. I want to say it now.
It's one of the two advantages, one of the two ways to tell if your star sand is still good. If you use distilled water, your sanitizer solution will stay clear.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell your sanitizing solution is losing its efficacy when it gets cloudy.
Yeah.
The other way to do it is to get pH strips and test the pH. If I'm doing a big 5 gallon of sanitizer for, you know, deep cleaning and just getting a lot of stuff out, like if I'm doing a bottling run on 2 or 3 batches, I'm just going to make a 5 gallon of star sand bottles cleaned and then, you know,
just soak them.
Yeah. Soak them, drain them, let them sit, move it on through. I'll use tap water for that. I don't care because I'm not planning on holding on to it long term.
Okay.
But for your day to day,
for my spray bottles and such like that,
mm-hmm.
I use distilled.
Yeah, distilled is the way to go.
But anyway, so get your honey, spring water, and you can actively keep, okay, have a stainless steel pan, cooking pan, put your equipment you're going to use in it, spray it down with your star sand, and leave it. Mm-hmm. You've got, now have a sanitized area you can use all your equipment. Put your honey and your water in, and turn on that drill or your mixer or your spoon or whatever you happen to be using and mix. And don't stop until everything is homogenous. I mean, there's no clumps of honey in there. You can't see any yellow spots anywhere in there on the bottom. There's no stringy yellow lines where the honey's almost done.
You know, it doesn't take very long for the must mix when you're starting to get pretty opaque, but I've gotten pretty far with being able to take that the stir drill, just not powered, and kind of probe around in there and see, okay, a little sticky, a little solid here, we got to keep going.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it's all well mixed, and to help you out with that, heat up your water just a little bit. 90-95 degrees is not going to hurt you.
No,
not going to hurt the honey. Not going to hurt your yeast, per se. If you get it warm, the water will melt the sugars faster.
And that temperature is not going to be significantly high enough to drive off very many, if any, volatile aromatics you want from the honey. If you've got something, you know, you've got black locust honey or something like that with a lot of good aroma character and stuff you want to hold on to that you paid a pretty penny for,
You're not gonna lose anything.
You're not gonna risk anything that way. Yeah. Why am I holding your glass now?
I don't know, because it was closer to you, I guess.
It's what I get for talking instead of watching what I'm doing.
Yeah. You put it down fast enough. Okay. But anyway, so after you get everything's well mixed, put your hydrometer in there, mark, you know, take your notebook out, mark out where this is. Is this where you want it? Get onto Brewer's Friend, use their calculator. What do you want for your percentage?
Right. The cool thing about mead or wine as opposed to beer is that you're generally not going to have a lot of residual sugar when it's done fermenting. Beer tends to have some level of unfermentable sugars in it that will always prevent you from getting to 1000. Mead, you'll usually hit 1000 as long as you are not going too far above the yeast's alcohol tolerance. And, you know, you can even go well below that. I've gone as low as 0.996 at times.
I have only gotten down to 0.99.
0.990?
Oh, 999. 9999.
Sounds like a German disagreement in here.
Yes, I was very disagreeable. When I first happened, I thought I did something wrong. Oh, shoot, it went below. It went to negative sugar. How did you do that? Okay, no, it did not.
Because alcohol is lighter than water. So.
Yes. But, after you get it all well mixed, and again, we're just talking about traditional honey here, a traditional mead here.
Yeah.
Now you need to, you know, with that 95 degree water, get a little bit out and a little bit, you know, with your thief or with a sanitized, stainless steel scoop of some kind. Put a little bit in your in a cup. Add your yeast, add your nutrients, mix it nicely until you smell the yeast coming off it.
Now, yeah, I will generally start my proofing before I mix the honey, just with some distilled water, spring water, what have you, in water that has been heated in that 75 to 85 range.
Yeast is not going to care about that little bit of temperature rise. It's
If
not
you
just.
take it to 95, it's a little bit on the risky side, but yeah, no, proofing is always a good policy. If you can, if you are going to do a higher gravity mead, like you're looking for, I would say maybe 14% and above, this is a good time to add some Go-Firm too, just to give the yeast that is starting waking up a little extra nutrient addition
To give it a
to
boost.
yeah, put it in the right place.
But we're talking about 8 and 12%, so go from it's not necessary. You get slightly warm water, give it and as you're mixing, like he does as you're mixing, I've done it both ways. When you smell the yeast coming off of the in the gas form, it's active, it's ready to go. Pour it in, give it a couple quick stirs, cap it.
Yeah, and if you're a baker, you know the process of proofing your yeast, and this is exactly the same thing, except we're not using milk or, sugar, or you're going to see bubbles, you're going to see activity, it's going to be obvious.
But I've also met a lot of people who prefer to throw the dry yeast on top and hope for the best. You can do that.
There are plenty of people that do that, and on a lighter ABV mead, it's low risk, I would say.
It's not here. What the important part here is you're trying to get the yeast to be the first active bacteria, active
Microflora.
microflora. Thank you. The first active microflora. Because if it's in there first, nothing else is going to take over. You are in like Flynn.
Remember, like we were talking about with the sanitization step, we are creating an environment that is conducive to yeast. Yeast will thrive in it more so than other organisms will. You can get mold, you can get bacteria, but the must that we are creating is more acidic and less conducive to the survival of mold and bacteria and things like that initially than just a good solid yeast. You want your yeast, your cultivated yeast, and not some wild yeast to take off and go first.
We did not go over the yeast that we use. A 71B is my workhorse.
Our your workhorse, my workhorse, 71B from Laban. It's a red wine yeast, but it makes damn good mead.
It makes really good meat.
And I know reliably, if I put in 110 points on the gravity scale, it's going to take all 110 of it, every time. And it is not prone to stalls. It takes, lower nutrient than many others, and it works great. Lauvin yeasts in general, though, most of them work pretty well for their individual use cases. I would say 71B is in that class where I would put that in damn near anything. Some of them, like BM 4x4 or RC212, are way more in that if I'm gonna make something red fruity.
And if you're going to make something tropical,
QA23 is a
QA23.
winner.
If you're, EC 111 is 11 18 rather, EC 11 18 is for high alcohol. If you're trying to get the upper end of what a yeast can do.
K1V116, I might have forgotten a one there, is another one that is higher alcohol tolerance. I like it a little bit better than EC1118, especially anything involving apples. I'm liable to put in 1116.
Okay. And then there you go. But just for this basic traditional meat, we're we 71B. It does absolutely a fantastic job run with it. Now you've done the hard work that you're gonna do for now. You're gonna wait. And you're gonna wait. And you're gonna wait.
The
About a week.
nutrient additions are another thing that I like to throw in for best practices here. And I talked before, my process is based mostly on TOSNA 2.0, except I've used the TEOSNA, the inorganic version of it. Look for TOSNA 2.0 and use it. It's very easy. You plug in some numbers into a formula, volume, gravity, convert gravity to bricks, times that bricks number, blah, blah, blah.
There is whole,
It's a simple formula. It's easy to do.
and you can get this formula online. It's
There
not
are,
hard.
you can also use I think it's meadtools.com now, has a calculator that does the same exact thing.
They actually have a recipe builder right here on their website. I just looked at it. I've never used it before, but there it is.
I've double checked their math on their nutrient calculator versus the math that I get with my formula in my head. It's accurate every time. So
Yeah,
they're
but
using the same formula.
yeah, but if you look at the three bars on the upper left-hand corner, hit that, it has place. It says main calculators and extra calculators. Find what you're looking for, go.
It's a good tool.
I may start looking at this a little more often.
They've got everything from blending, bottling calculator, temperature correction, the refractometer collection we were talking correction we were talking about. All of it's in there. It's great.
Nice. All right. Anyway, so now you're waiting. And you're going to stir it up. You're going to open up in about a week and make sure you have a sanitized stirrer and stir it up again. Make sure there's nothing being protected. The yeast is getting everywhere it needs to go.
Right, I'll stir it once or twice a day for that first week.
Yeah, degassing.
That degassing has stopped stalls for me. It's been a useful addition to my process.
The most I've ever done is once every 2 to 3 days. And I've not had serious stalls that I've noticed. I'm getting good product. Your own level of attention, guys.
That said, degas before you add nutrients if you're doing step feeding,
Oh, yes.
especially if you're using Fermeid O.
Please.
Fermeid K can be its own bugbear, but Fermeid O is even worse. There are so that Fermeid O is, at least the kind I had, was such a fine powder, it was absolutely chock-a-block with nucleation sites. And the minute I added it in there and started stirring, mead came up.
And so, guys, degassing is just a fancy way of saying stir it, get the bubbles out. You can get bubbles out simply by tapping it regularly or giving it a swirl while it's capped.
Right. If you've got like the 1 gallon glass jar kind of fermenters, just grab it by the neck and kind of give it a vigorous little swirl. That'll do the job.
They'll do a job of fun.
Get your stirrer in there if it's bigger and you can't lift it easily and rock it.
Yeah.
That works too. The
What
point
you're trying to
is,
do is get the gas out.
yeah. The thing is, your alcohol is being made by microscopic critters. Microscopic critters create two things based on the sugar they eat. They create the ethyl alcohol and they create carbon dioxide. Both of those are in microscopic forms that's easily dissolvable in water. The reason I like degassing, if you don't degas, that carbon dioxide mixes with water and creates carbonic acid. It's a really easy thing to break down too, just by stirring it, because you can just literally.
All you're literally doing is making them form together so they come up and go out.
Right. That lowers your pH, that keeps your yeast happy. When I started making mead, I got so many stalls, and I have not had a major stall since. Game changer for me.
Yeah, but I'm not saying I'll open it up and stir it like every 2 or 3 days. I will tap it, I will bang on it, I will stir it without opening it a lot more frequently in the first 2 weeks. So I'm doing basically the same thing Jeff is, but I just don't always like opening it up because it just makes me nervous.
Fair. I think I may be doing it a little bit more intentionally, but I think we're achieving the same ends with the same idea in mind.
The idea is you need to keep an eye after your first, say, 4 weeks.
It depends
Maybe,
on a lot of factors, but
okay,
yeah,
if you
four.
see no bubbles coming up for a long period of time, I'm
And if.
talking a long period of time, start checking your gravity.
Right. Your gravity is. You're not going to have a complete ferment in 3 to 4 weeks, probably. There are.
This also depends on your volume of what you're doing.
Right.
I'm not going to have a complete ferment in my 7 to 10 gallon bucket in under 3 months. More than likely.
So, one of the biggest cues for me for needing to get to secondary is you start getting a cake of yeast on the bottom.
Yeah.
You don't want things resting on a cake of yeast. That's where you get the weird off flavors, bitterness, things like
Yeah.
that. So, 3, 4 weeks, an inch or so of yeast cake, take your pick.
Yeah.
But then it's time to move to secondary.
Now the secondary is simply getting your mead off the yeast cake so it doesn't affect anything.
And they call that racking. I will rack more than once over the course of ferments, depending on how alcoholic it's being. I mean, most beers I can do one rack to secondary. I don't even necessarily need to rack it a second time before I go to bottling.
Yeah. But here's where we talked about that racking cane. This is where you're using your racking cane, guys.
Yep.
Don't put your tube up, don't put your siphon tube, the ones pulling your mead, on the bottom. Put it about an inch above the cane.
Most of them have a little rubber foot thing that they include in there to prevent that exact thing.
Yeah, and that's why. You're not sucking up the cake, you're sucking up everything above it. Once you get that racked over, I've never gone less than two racks. I've rarely gone more than four.
Sounds about right.
But by the same token, once you get everything racked off, and this is, I'll rack once or twice a week, because the sediment, once you get to that point, the sediment, it'll settle rather quickly, especially if you use things like Duofine.
Dual fine is a great finishing agent, and at this point, we're getting into the end of the ferment. This is also Dual fine is a great finishing agent. I also like bentonite. There are other ones out there. Isinglass, I think, is another one, but Dual fine
Dual
works.
fine works great, man.
It's an easy one to add, and
Now, we did skip over a small part for me. About the point I put it in secondary, I will generally kill my yeast. Generally. In a traditional, this is probably about where I'm going to do it.
disagree. I wait until it's done.
Okay.
There is a distinct phase between, to me, secondary when it's doing the cleanup stuff and doing basically at ready to bottle
Okay.
phase. So I'll let it sit for another month or two and do maybe it's only the last 10 points of gravity, but I'll let it sit and handle that because that's generally when the yeast will also they will consume some of the byproducts of their earlier fermentation and make a cleaner finished mead that
Okay,
way
fair.
too.
I'll have to try them.
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet.
Much like you were saying, I kind of let that sediment cake at the bottom be my guide as to, do I need to rack again? If I get half an inch to an inch, it's time to rack again.
And depending on how big your bucket is, a gallon is not going to is going to take you 2 3 minutes tops. A 10 gallon, bring a book. You're going to be here a while, but
It also depends on the width of your tube. My stainless steel racking cane uses a wider tube than the plastic ones you buy at, Bacchus or whatever. And it's not that much wider, but the internal diameter of that tube being just a little wider means it runs almost twice as fast.
okay.
So,
Well, I don't have a wider one, so I just exercise patience, and
yeah.
it works. It doesn't matter. I'm going into a clean sanitized bucket or container, and off and Bob's your uncle. Once you get enough that you have virtually no cake. Now, this is where Jeff and I kind of diverge. I will filter the last step. Jeff doesn't, as a general rule.
Fining is all I really need at the end of the day. If I were a professional mead maker trying to sell mine on the open market and it had to look nice on a store shelf, I would absolutely filter. I see why it's done. I just don't need the expense or the time constraint or the wasted mead because those filters soak up mead.
Oh, they do.
And it's another step I just don't need for, for that finishing step. Fining gets perfectly clear, nice, pretty bottles for all the bore I need it for.
And this, honestly, whether you filter like I do or just find it like Jeff does, you're getting good product. It really doesn't have. I like the really pretty bottles, just for as that's one of my aesthetic OCD things. I like pretty mead, so I filter. I have not always filtered on Jeff's recommendation. I did not filter several batches, and did it taste good? Absolutely.
I have, as a starting mead maker, I had a couple batches of mead that I bottled cloudy and then they settled in the bottle. I swear to God, some of them tasted better cloudy than they did settled.
Okay.
And if you're bottling a cloudy mead, there's a good chance it's going to settle eventually. When that eventually happens, you're going to end up with a yeast cake in the bottle, which is not attractive. But if you don't care, you don't care.
Yeah,
It's
it's
not
all
a big
good.
deal.
And
Now,
honestly, the yeast cake is not going to hurt you a bit, so you're fine.
it is high in vitamin B12,
Yeah,
which,
it's good for you.
our bodies can make, but it's a nutrient exhaustive kind of process to make it. So,
So yeah, we're making
get it from
healthy
your diet.
mead. That's it. We're making healthy mead.
Yeah, the most widely spread poison in the entire world. It's healthy.
It's
But this whole secondary and like near bottling, and even to an extent primary, does, however, come along with the part of the mead making process where I will allow things to be measured in volume or by weight, for example. And we're talking about additions here. You can talk about fruit in primary or in secondary, or like as a back sweetening ingredient using some fruit juice.
And we talked about that. We actually had an episode where we talked about a guy did the exact same. He did it primary and secondary and told you the differences. Look it up.
Really cool experiment Garrett from Man Made Mead did. You can find that on his YouTube channel. There's a link to a Google Sheets document with all the different, like,
What he did and how it did and how it turned out.
really
It's really
fantastic
cool.
document. Could not recommend checking that out enough. But this is also the time where if you're going to do oak, even in a traditional, I think a little oak
Doesn't
works
hurt
great.
you. Yeah, we're I am slowly becoming an oak advocate.
And
I mean, for I don't know how long I can tell like the last year or so, I couldn't have cared less if I oaked it or not. I really couldn't have. I did it a couple times because you said, "No, do this." Fine. But and I did, and yeah, did taste it may help it out. Yes, you were annoyingly accurate, but yeah, the more the farther I go into this, and the more I taste oaked meads, it's pronounced. It makes a difference.
I'll measure oak by ounces. Usually beans, or you could do individual little like the corkscrew stave kind of things. Those are fine too. It's created by a manufacturer to be measured in that regard. But usually I'll do the little beans, cubes, whatever you want to call them, and measure it, start like half an ounce per gallon. That's in that case, I measure by weight because it's just the best way to handle it. What am I going to do? Put a quarter cup of oak in? There are
It's
some
a weight.
breeds.
So
That's a volume, not a weight.
I can measure that. It's a weight. I know you're gonna hit me later.
There are some things I will allow, measurement by volume. If we're going to do like ground spices, what else? You could do it by weight. You could do it by volume. Either way, it works, I think, as
And it's
long as you're
pretty much the
making.
same anyway.
The piece of equipment that we did not mention at the beginning that is absolutely necessary?
What's that?
A notebook and a pen or pencil.
I did mention notebook earlier. I
Not in
said,
the stuff you need, but take notes, guys.
take notes. Yeah, notebook and pen. Pen, not pencil. Keep it there, make it more permanent.
If you spell must or mead on pencil, it doesn't run like ink does.
You get your notebook that close to the mead?
It's on the table with me.
I keep it on another spot.
Shit gets wild down here, buddy.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, but yeah, the pen and paper, pencil and paper, very important.
You got to take good notes. I mean, if in this modern day and age, you can do voice notes or whatever the hell you want to do it, so long as you're keeping accurate notes and keeping them detailed. I mean, however it works for you, find your process and just stick to it.
And guys, if you need a form to do your process with, jeffsmeadtools.com, first page you get to is a recipe builder.
It's not mymeadtools.com. It's just the one that I was referring him
Yeah,
to. I
well,
don't own this site,
no,
but
he does not, but
it is
I was trying to refer to the ones he brought up earlier. The recipe builder is right there, the weight, the gallons, the ingredients, all that. You can just start with there and make notes and then build it from there.
it is useful.
It's useful. It's and you keep great notes, you're going to make great meat, I promise you.
At the very least, keeping good notes, you will be able to figure out what you did wrong and not do it again.
Yeah, and then great mead will come. I promise it will happen. The practice is in the poison.
Chris, we've been, I think this lasted about twice as long as we expected
Yeah, but real
it
quick, after you either finish or filter like I do, sanitize your bottles, sanitize your corks,
to.
bottle, cork,
Or cap.
enjoy, or cap,
Either way.
enjoy. I mean, after that, label, for God's sakes, label it in some fashion. Jeff uses little shrink wrap caps with color,
Or colored bottle caps.
with colored bottle caps.
There are different ways to do
I actually put a washable label on mine and write down the name, the alcohol volume, and when I put it in the bottle. As simple as that. And guys, I wanted to go over this because more people are listening now, and I want you to hear the same things. Go on our website. We got the 8%, we got the 12%,
16% too.
and 16. I forgot about the 16%. We got 16% too. Pick where you want to start, make some great mead, And come back, tell us about
Yeah, we will be back next week with probably something a little bit more fun and a little less technical.
it. Yeah, well.
We like to mix it up.
Yeah. Sometimes I enjoy the technical world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The technical is something you got to get past if you want to make good meme.
Yeah, it
Sorry.
is. All right, guys, have a great day. Happy meeting. Take care of yourself. Jeff,
Chris,
see you
cheers.
next week. Cheers.